Over the Edge, The Tanner Death March by Larry Vardaman. During several tours to the Grand Canyon, the weather has been extremely hot, to the point that backpackers have not needed to carry tents or heavy clothing. However, in 1987, the daytime temperature reached unusually high levels, and the backpacking became almost unbearable. Dr. John Morris led one of the groups of 16 backpackers that year down the Tanner Trail near Desert View Tower in the eastern section of the Grand Canyon. David Rush and Walter Barnhart assisted John on this trip. Because of the heat and the lack of water on this trail, it became known as the Tanner Death March. The group knew that they would be dry camping on the first night and would not have water until they reached the river at the end of 2 days. Each of the hikers carried 4 quarts of water with plenty of electrolyte additives in the form of Gookinade, lemonade, and Gatorade. However, the extremely high temperatures were not anticipated, so the hot, dusty trail became a real challenge to the cohesiveness of the group. At the rim, John started the group out with a challenge that no one would make any complaints all week. These trips are typically not only challenging physically and intellectually, but also emotionally and spiritually. Since we're a Christian organization, we desire to provide an experience in the canyon which provides an opportunity for participants to grow in all these domains. We view the backpacking trip somewhat like a Christian outward bound experience. This week became a real laboratory opportunity for this expectation. After being dropped off by bus at the trailhead, the group set off, descending the trail through the layers of Kaibab limestone, Toro Weep Formation, Coconino Sandstone, Hermit Shale, and Supai Group to the top of the Redwall Limestone, where they spent the night. The group was well into their second quart of water by the time they reached camp. They conserved as much water as they could during supper and the morning meals. However, when they started down the trail on the second day, most had little more than a quart of water to last the day. Unfortunately, the second day was even hotter than the first, partly because they were lower in the canyon, where the daytime temperatures exceeded 120 degrees Fahrenheit on some portions of the trail. After they dropped below the Redwall Limestone to the Tonto platform, the temperature was high, but not as high as it was to become below the Tapete Sandstone. On the Tanner Trail, as opposed to other trails in the canyon, the Tapete Sandstone lies on top of the Cardenas Basalt and Dock Siltstone, rather than Vishnu Schist and Zoroaster Granite. These lower sedimentary layers are tilted upward from the north side of the canyon and extend partway up the Tanner Trail. This is one of the few places the Cardenas Basalt and Dock Siltstone can be studied on the south side of the river in the canyon. Creationist geologists have speculated for years how these layers fit into the flood model. Many creationists assume that the sedimentary rock layers began to accumulate above the hard crystalline basement rock on the Great Unconformity at the end of the flood. In the Grand Canyon, the Great Unconformity occurs at the interface between the Vishnu Schist and the Tapete Sandstone. The Vishnu Schist was apparently planed off by the fast-moving waters of the flood, leaving a relatively flat surface on which the flood sediments began to accumulate as the flow of water began to slow and drop its sediments. In eastern Grand Canyon, however, the inclined layers of Dock Siltstone, Shinumu Quartzite, Hakatai Shale, Bass Limestone, and Cardenas Basalt don't appear to fit into this picture. First, because the layers are inclined, they would appear to have been formed before the Genesis Flood, or, if not then, during the initial bursts of the flood. Second, these layers have been reported to contain fossils of a plant that grows in shallow oceans. The most likely time these layers would have formed before the Genesis Flood would have been on the third day of creation when God separated the continents from the oceans. There seems to be no other geological events described in the Bible which are sufficiently catastrophic to produce these layers between creation and the Genesis flood. God created some plants on the third day, and the process of separating the continents from the oceans on this day would likely have done considerable geologic work and produced sediments. It's possible that these layers did not require some catastrophic process to form, but represent deposition offshore from the well-watered pre-flood continents. These layers do not contain any marine animals, which would be expected if they were formed during the flood. However, creationists have not yet studied them sufficiently to identify the time and process of their formation with any certainty. As the Tanner backpackers made their way across the Supai group below the Red Wall Limestone, they found plenty of worm burrows, invertebrate hash, and some evidence of trilobite tracks. As they moved into the Cardenas basalt and Dock siltstone, no evidence of any fossils were found. In fact, few plants even grow in this layer today. These layers are composed of red and black loosely consolidated material, which easily erodes and forms small gravel and dust. The Tanner Trail traverses these layers on the east side of a north-south canyon, so that the sun strikes these dark layers almost perpendicular in the afternoon, creating extreme temperatures. The backpacking group trudged on and on for several long miles. By mid-afternoon, the group lost almost all interest in geology and paleontology as they made their way to the Colorado River. Stumbling over the never-ending and never-changing Dock siltstone sapped every bit of interest and attention. By this time, no one had much, if any, water left, and everyone was walking in almost dead silence, anticipating the cold, refreshing river water by drinking and waiting, for drinking and waiting. The temperature was at least 120 degrees Fahrenheit, and dust caked the boots, the faces, and the arms of every hiker. The dark red dust gave them the appearance of Anasazi Indians carrying backpacks. Their bleary eyes betrayed the near desperate plight of this band of intrepid explorers. After nearly 3 hours of hot, dusty hiking across the Cardenas basalt and Dock siltstone, the Tanner group finally caught a glimpse of the Colorado River. As they quickened their pace, they began to realize that the river was not the bright green color they were expecting. In fact, it appeared to be a dirty brown color. When they finally reached it, they were appalled to find that the river was flowing like thick chocolate pudding. No one could drink this water, even though they were literally dying of thirst. John immediately broke out the Katadyn filters for purifying drinking water and began to pump water into a canteen. In less than two strokes of the pump, the filter was clogged up with silt, and water stopped flowing from the outlet tube. John immediately realized they'd be unable to filter the river water this way, and jokingly stated, "We're all going to die." One spunky member of the group promptly reminded their leader of the trailhead challenge not to complain all week, and followed up by suggesting to John that he build a small settling basin on the riverbank and resume using the filter when most of the water had clarified. While John built the settling basin, most of the group removed their shoes and began to wade in the river to cool off and refresh their feet. However, no one remained in the river for more than about 2 minutes because the water was so cold and so painful to their suffering feet. After about 30 minutes, John resumed pumping, this time from the settling basin, and he was able to slowly fill several canteens with fresh water by continually disassembling and cleaning the filter. As the sun descended behind the canyon walls to the west and the temperature began to drop, the group finally came out of their lethargy, worked to repair blisters on their feet, and continued to pump water. Although they were no longer in danger of heat exhaustion, they soon realized that pumping water from the river was so time-consuming that they needed to find another source of water. John suggested that they join up a day early with the raft group by hiking upstream to Lava Falls, where the raft group would be spending the night. The raft had a large pumping system and could supply them with all the water they needed. Since it was still daylight, the group headed eastward over the ridge toward the site where the raft was scheduled to spend the night. On the way, they encountered the largest rattlesnake ever seen by any of our hiking groups in the canyon. Rattlesnakes in the canyon have taken on a pink color to match the red sediments washed downstream from the Supai group. They look just like timber rattlers except for their color. This particular snake was over 5 feet long and very fat. Color variation in rattlesnakes is part of the adaptation to environmental conditions they encounter, not due to evolution. Rattlesnakes apparently have the natural ability or the variability built into their genes, which allows them to take on different colorations. Snakes with a pink coloration have a greater chance of surviving in the Grand Canyon than green ones. If pink Grand Canyon rattlers were transported to an environment where green coloration was favorable to their survival, the descendants of the pink rattlers, which tended to have a more greenish tint, would eventually outnumber the pinkish rattlers. The same adaptability to black or white colorations has been found to be true for the peppered moth in England. The increase in the number of black peppered moths during the Industrial Revolution was at first ascribed to evolution. The disappearance of white moths was found to be a response to the added smoke in the air and black deposits on surfaces. The natural predators of the moth were able to see the white moths more easily than the black moths in the sooty locations. When the environmental conditions were later cleaned up significantly, the number of white moths increased again. This was no evolutionary change, only a statistical adaptation to the environmental conditions. Just before dark, the Tanner group climbed the last ridge on their way to Lava Falls. Ahead, they could see the rafts tied up at the campsite on the other side of the river. John yelled down the hill and attracted the rafters' attention. Soon, one of the rafts crossed the river to pick up the hikers. Even better, they brought a bucket full of cold, juicy oranges, as well as fresh water. Not long after, the entire group of rafters and backpackers sat down to a fantastic spaghetti dinner. If you're going to have a tough day hiking in the canyon, the best way to end the day is to meet up with a raft group on the river for one of their famous meals. The next morning, the Tanner group joined the raft group for a hike up Lava Canyon to see the folded strata, which was formed in this part of the canyon when the Kaibab Plateau was upwarped. After this hike, and because of the tough 2 days coming down the Tanner Trail, the Tanner group had to spend considerable time that evening working on their feet. Many had large blisters and sore feet. Moleskin was applied liberally. Because of the amount of moleskin used by the group and the great singing, the Tanner group exhibited that night and at the victory banquet on the following Saturday evening, it was given the nickname the Moleskin Choir. The Tanner group had originally taken the name the Tanner Troubadours when they discovered that the group had an unusually good set of voices. They practiced their four-part harmony for the raft group that night and sang an especially effective version of When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. John offered a devotional of Psalm 22, bringing a great day to a close with the Bible's prophetic account of Christ's endurance under ultimate suffering. The next day, the raft group floated the Tanner group through Lava Falls and back down to the Tanner Trail, taking the grateful hikers with them. After being supplied with fresh lemonade and plenty of water, the Tanner group headed back up the trail. Following an uneventful 2-day hike, the Tanner group made it to the top of the canyon 5,000 feet above and 10 miles away. One woman had injured her knee and remained with the rafters to Phantom Ranch, where she took a mule ride to the rim. Such problems are a constant threat, but God has always answered our prayers for health and safety. Although no one died or was permanently injured by the experience, this hike is still known as the Tanner Death March. This title is probably overstated, But when the leader of such an experience becomes our president, he is entitled to some latitude.